Both our states have rich histories of people who had a few dollars or hours to spare to spend on making their communities stronger. We'll focus on Oregon's story today, past, present, and future, and today's guests make it easy. They are the joint authors of a book on philanthropy in Oregon. It is called State of Giving, Stories of Oregon Volunteers, Donors, and Nonprofits. The authors are Greg Chalet. He's a veteran volunteer and the former president of the Oregon Community Foundation. Welcome, Greg.
Thank you.
And Kristen Anderson is here as well. Chris is a nonprofit consultant, writer, and educator. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Let's get a little more resume extension before we get too far along here, and tell us a bit about each of you. Chris?
Well, I'm a native Oregonian and moved away a number of years ago, about 15 years ago, first to the East Coast, and then I lived in Britain for 11 years. And my background is kind of varied. I taught English literature at the University of Oxford, but I also moonlighted at a number of nonprofits, including Dignity in Dying, which is akin to Death with Dignity here, and the Montreal International Poetry Prize, and a couple of others. And so when my husband and I decided to move back to Oregon, I knew that it was a nonprofit path that I wanted to take. And I fortunately landed on my feet by hooking up with Greg Chalet, who knows everything about Oregon nonprofits. And writing this book and traveling around the state was a really great way to reorientate myself back in Oregon.
Greg, you're something of an encyclopedia of Oregon nonprofits by the sounds of it, and sounds like the State of Giving is really a case of putting your brain on paper.
Yeah, it is in many ways. My history has pretty much been the Oregon Community Foundation for over 30 years, and I was the president for 24 years. So in that capacity, I had a chance to travel all over the state, meet citizens doing good works, and people giving money to help with the good works. And so it's just a real positive experience. And when I retired 3 years ago, I was encouraged to write a book. And I couldn't do that by myself. So I linked up with Chris, and we've formed quite a team and put together what I think is a really comprehensive overview of philanthropy and nonprofits and donors in Oregon.
I was going to ask you about the genesis of the project. So that's how it started. People said, hey, you should write a book.
Yeah. I call them the enablers. the naggers. They encouraged me to do that. And finally, one woman gave me three biographies. And I said, if she cares that much about me writing a book, I'd better do it. Mm-hmm. So, but linking up with Chris was really the big step in getting this done.
And so had either of you written anything quite like this before, up to this length?
Well, I wrote a very long thesis, but it was very academic and had little of the hopefully popular appeal that this book does. And I've written a number of other small, short commentary pieces, but nothing like this. This was a real first for me, and I think it was a first for Greg, too.
And so how did you divide up the duties? It sounds like a lot of this started off with debriefing you, Greg.
It did, actually. There was a lot of debriefing. We sat down together and talked about what I know and what I thought was important to cover, and then Chris and I did an outline that really focused in on the key issues facing Oregon, and we decided not to write a history of philanthropy in Oregon. We felt that that wasn't what would be needed. What was really needed was a prospective look at what are the key issues and how is philanthropy working to address those issues, and that's the way the book came out.
And in fact, you point out early on that this is a look at philanthropy since about 1980 in Oregon. Why choose that general time slot to begin the look?
Well, because in my perspective, that's when philanthropy really took off in Oregon. A number of things happened. The Schneider Museum in Ashland was built in that period of time. The Criterion was built. Shakespeare built some additional theater space. Throughout the state, the High Desert Museum, the Portland Center for Performing Arts, there was what I call a renaissance of philanthropy during the 80s and 90s, which tailed off when the natural resource economy tailed off.
That was the question, is whether it mirrored the trend in wealth growth in Oregon, and largely due to the resource industry, it sounds like.
Yeah, it in many ways it has mirrored that. There was strong philanthropy. Timber was king in the 80s, and there was a lot of philanthropy that was developed out of timber and the sale of timber. And then the decline of the timber industry really saw a tail off of philanthropy. There was a residual effect, maybe a lag effect. It took 10, 15 years for philanthropy to kind of dry up in the timber industry. And our book covers that period pretty well and talks about the timber barons who drove philanthropy in the 80s and then the decline. So it's an interesting history, but the book, as I say, is not a history book. There are sections that cover history that people will find interesting. You might ask, Jeff, who's the audience for this book? And we see multiple audiences. We see citizens who care about communities. We see instructors who are teaching philanthropy in colleges and universities in Oregon. We see fundraisers who want insights into donors, and they'll read the book and they'll get insights into, so that's how Arlene Schnitzer makes her decisions about philanthropy. And we're at the early stage of marketing the book, and we were fortunate enough that Oregon State University Press agreed to take it on, and that was a real endorsement for us. It's not self-published. It's published by a legitimate press that went through rigorous academic review and came out the other end with approval.
We'll talk about the rigor involved in getting the book into print and talk more about the contents of it as well. Greg Chalet and Kristen Anderson are guests on the Jefferson Exchange, co-authors of a book about philanthropy called State of Giving, the state in this case, Oregon. It's a double entendre. We'll pursue that as well. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Greg and Kristen and you in a minute 15. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about philanthropy generally on the Oregon side of the state line. There's a new book out about philanthropy in the recent past and looking at the present situation and casting some ideas to the future as well. The authors are Greg Chalet, who was the former president of the Oregon Community Foundation, Kristen Anderson, a nonprofit consultant, writer, and educator who's also done some work with the Oregon Community Foundation. The book is called State of Giving, Stories of Oregon Volunteers, Donors, and Nonprofits. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about volunteering either time or money or something else. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. 800-838-3760, jx@jeffnet.org, or check out our Facebook page to a studio picture of Greg and Kristen. Everybody loves having their picture taken early in the morning, we find.
So. Oh, absolutely. That was a lot of fun.
Thanks. Thanks for at least smiling about that. Greg, in the book, you mentioned before we hit the break about Arlene Schnitzer and her husband and the giving that they did, and the Schnitzer Concert Hall in Portland and the Holt Center in Eugene. Now, you also point out in the book that there was some disdain from certain quarters of the Oregon community for these named donations that created those entities, like the Holt Center.
Right. There was, I think, a feeling of people doing it for the recognition rather than the impact. And our experience is that people rarely do it for that reason, that the Schnitzers and the Schneiders here in Ashland agreed to have their names put on these buildings to encourage others to give and to show leadership. And but that seemed to backfire in the sense that people felt that that was self-aggrandizement and bringing too much attention to yourself.
Of course, that was in the days, too, before we had the Moda Center and CenturyLink Field in Seattle,
yeah,
and all the other naming rights things that go on now.
It's all changed, and now it's common put your name on something. So the people who put their names on buildings in the early 80s did it, were really leaders in breaking through and setting an example. We're talking about large gifts. We also need to recognize that even the smallest gift can be a game changer. And we've seen many, many small gifts be game changers in terms of the direction of a project. And the book documents those, tells that story as well.
So, Kristen Anderson, is the book a chance to recognize good deeds, to spur more on, a little bit of each?
I would say absolutely a little bit of each. We really hope that through the book we are celebrating just a handful of the amazing stories that populate Oregon. I mean, some across the state, in all four corners of it, there are people from all demographics who are doing really good work in their communities, rich people, poor people, old kids, it doesn't matter. There's a wealth of philanthropy, and by philanthropy we also mean volunteerism, in Oregon. And so we are conceiving of the book very much as a chance to celebrate just a handful of those, but we really want to use these profiles as a chance to hopefully reach more people and inspire more people to get involved with their communities too. So we hope that these profiles on the one recognize some of the good work that's going on, but also catalyze more of it.
You know, obviously the book is nearly 300 pages. It probably could have been even fatter still if you'd included a lot more history. And Greg, as you'd mentioned, this kind of stops at 30 years ago or 35 years ago. But also more categories of things. And you point out that you left out generally most religious and corporate giving, Kristen, is that right?
We did, yes. I think we really wanted to highlight some of the social issues that are most important to Oregonians. The book is structured so that each chapter tackles what we regard to be a key issue that faces Oregon, so environmental conservation, education inequity, the elevation of arts and cultural funding, social justice, and inclusion, and a handful of others. And in each of those chapters, we profile organizations and the people that power those organizations that are really working to change the game and to combat some of those problems. We did leave some categories out just because we felt like they'd either been already covered or because we had a hard time narrowing down some of the good work that's been done in those areas.
So by skipping, for example, the corporate folks, you're probably not going to get a brief mention of the likes of Paul Allen and Phil Knight. But I have to ask the question of if whether the kind of donations they make outstrip what a lot of smaller donations do, or if it's actually more weighted the other way, that most of the money that comes to organizations for good works are smaller ones.
Well, we've actually seen a decline in corporate giving over the last few decades, and it's actually been frustrating to witness. Some of the biggest companies in Oregon actually have lower rates of giving than they did in the 80s, and I think that's partially because the perceived marketing value of big corporate gifts has dropped, and so the altruism has fallen away accordingly. We really think that individual giving is what's really shifting things in Oregon. We would love to see more corporate giving, but right now it's everyday people who are driving social change and improvement in Oregon.
That's interesting to think in those terms, though, the marketing value of corporate giving, that, that there is some eye anyway to return on investment when you ladle out money for one foundation or nonprofit group or another.
You know, there are some outstanding corporations in Oregon, and there's a whole movement afoot called B Corps. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but it's ethical businesses, so they really put community building
B-corps
alongside.
B Corps as opposed to S Corps.
Right,
sort of thing,
exactly. Right. So B Corps are regarded as ethical businesses that put community building alongside profit building. But, you know, at this point in time, they're few and far between. We would love to see an upwelling of B Corps and other similarly philanthropic corporation models. But right now, they're a minority.
Okay, I don't want to get stuck on money here. So, Greg Chalet, this is really about more than just donations, just about more than people writing checks, right?
Oh, absolutely. This is, for example, the Smart Start Making a Reader Today program, which is a statewide reading program, has 8,000 volunteers. 8,000 volunteers statewide who are reading to kids in the first three grades in school. And the purpose of that is to get those kids up to third grade reading standards when they hit third grade, because that's the most important point where you learn or don't learn moving forward. Another fantastic program that is one of my favorites is Cycle Oregon. And Cycle Oregon is a program that comes through 2,000 cyclists coming through Southern Oregon every few years as part of the statewide ride. And they've built up a $2 million endowment from gifts from people from $25 to $100 to whatever. And it's a broad-based effort to close the urban-rural divide, get urban people who like to ride bikes and wear Lycra to ride through Jacksonville. And that's an example, again, of grassroots philanthropy.
Well, let's talk about that, the Bridging the Urban-Rural Divide, because that is the first full chapter in the book. And how distinct is it now, and how much more distinct or less than it was at the period of time the book begins examining Oregon society?
Well, the couple of concerns. The main concern is declining income. We're seeing a disparity now between urban and rural income on average of $9,000 per year per household. And other areas is a decline in technology availability for rural residents, and just a whole slew of other factors that we see rural Oregon falling behind urban Oregon. And that's bad for the state. 20 years ago, there was parity between urban and rural Oregon, again, because of the natural resource economy. So we believe that there has to be something seriously done and attended to prevent our decline of small towns that we love so much and make up such a important part of the Oregon culture.
We're talking about giving in Oregon, both giving of money and giving of time. The book State of Giving, Stories of Oregon Volunteers, Donors, and Nonprofits is the work of Greg Chalet and Kristen Anderson. And you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 throughout the listening area. 800-838-3760. The email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Kristen, you've traveled a fair amount yourself. I mean, is the urban-rural divide getting bigger than in Oregon?
That's hard for me to say. I was absent from the state for too long during the core period that I think Greg and I are talking about in the book. I don't know if it's getting bigger, but I do know that some of the social problems are widening. There's a number of counties in Oregon that have unprecedented racial diversity now, and they're really struggling to keep pace with ways to bring services to these new populations and to be inclusive and tolerant of these new communities. There are a number of other, I think, very quick changes that have happened in rural Oregon that have maybe exacerbated the perception of the urban-rural divide. Whether or not the economy is worsening noticeably, it's hard for me to say. That being said, I think there are some really heartening stories that are coming from rural Oregon, too. We, in the book, talk a little bit about the work of a nonprofit called Sustainable Northwest and their partner nonprofits, Lake County Resources Initiative, which is down in Lakeview, and Wallowa Resources, which is out in Enterprise, Oregon. And they have found, they're run by nonprofits, they are nonprofits, and these nonprofits have found ways to bring very disparate members of the community together, environmentalists together with ranchers and foresters and timber folk together around a table to find ways to both preserve the local economy and also to conserve those precious natural environments that they're surrounded by. So there's some good, there are good news stories coming from rural Oregon too. We would like to see more of them.
Greg, some of the examples you give historically, and again, it's fairly recent history, but there were some people who seemed to be able to bridge the urban-rural divide just by making sure they got to lots of places. And one of the names that comes up is Bob Chandler, the newspaper guy. So tell us a bit about him.
Well, he's one of our favorite in the book. Bob was the editor of the Bend Bulletin, and he owned nine other newspapers throughout Oregon. And he was really concerned about the urban-rural divide. Fortunately, he had a Cessna airplane that allowed him to travel to different communities. And he made it a point to write stories that if you lived in La Grande, you were reading about what was happening in Bend. And if you lived in Bend, you were learning what's happening in Baker City. He made it a point to share stories that made one Oregon. And I think it's just an attitude like that that is so important to get around the state, to learn about Oregon. We have people who live in Beaverton, Oregon, who have never been to Southern Oregon, and maybe vice versa. And personally, I think that that's too bad, because we need to cross-fertilize ideas, meet each other, and we'll be a stronger state because of that.
It's okay to feel a sense of ownership for the entire state, not just your corner of it.
Yeah, and that's what I devoted my career to, was bringing Oregon together, and I think with some success, bringing Oregon together. And because of that, we're stronger economically, we're stronger culturally, and we should do more of it.
I want to come back to the example that you cited of Cycle Oregon, because that rather surprised me to see that in there. I mean, it's been talked about and been done a lot in the time since I moved to Oregon almost 30 years ago. How long is the tail for Cycle Oregon, though? I mean, once the last tire tracks fade, what is left behind from Cycle Oregon that leads to bringing parts of Oregon together?
Well, first of all, the cyclists learn about rural Oregon because they're on the pavement 3 feet away on their bikes, and so they're learning as they camp in various towns, and there's entertainment that comes out at those events. But I think really what we see with Cycle Oregon is they make grants back to local communities. The football field lights in Dufour, Oregon were paid for by Cycle Oregon. And they put on roofs and granges, and they give back to the communities where they ride. And that's a unifying activity. And people talk to each other. The local folks talk to the cyclists, and it's one small but I think strong example of bringing this state together.
In this chapter about bridging the urban-rural divide, Bill Thorndike of Medford gets in here. Tell us what he's been up to.
Just about everything.
Yeah, you see the Thorndike name attached to a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Well, Bill's been very active with Crater Lake Education Center and raising money for that and the license plate. He's trying to increase the revenue that would come from the license plate sales for the Education Center at Crater Lake. And he's very active in a number of Portland-based activities. And again, another example of someone who's not just a local person, but is got a statewide vision. That's one of the purposes of the book, in my mind, is to create an opportunity for Oregonians to learn about programs in other parts of the state that they wouldn't learn about otherwise. This book is unique in that it tells those stories that you would never hear, Jeff, unless you read that book. And we dug those out and spent a lot of time working on them.
And Kristen, you want to add something here?
Yeah, the Oregon Value and Belief Survey that came out a couple of years ago highlighted a lot of differences between urban and rural Oregon, but it mostly highlighted areas in which there are surprising solidarities. So as it turns out, urban Oregonians and rural Oregonians share more in common than they have indifference. And I think it's important that we remember that you know, whether you're based in a town or whether you're based in a tiny town or whether you're based on the countryside, there's a lot that unites us. And the way that we find that out is by continuing these conversations and making an effort to get to know disparate parts of the state. So I think a lot of the organizations that we profile in this chapter are explicitly these kind of bridge builders. There's one of my favorites is a tiny little one called Slam Boo, which
Slam
is
Boo?
Slam Boo, which is a it's a slam poetry contest for middle schoolers that's based in St. Helens, Oregon, out on the Columbia. And the entire purpose of it is to bring these middle schoolers together. So they have an urban middle school, a couple of suburban middle schools, and a rural middle school. And they bring these kids together, they slam some poetry, and they have these moments of connection. And the cross-pollination between these communities has been pretty fantastic. And all of these kids rave about how much they have in common, and it's a transcendent moment to them. They're amazed by, like, sharing something with, you know, the rural kids and the urban kids. They actually have a lot to talk about. So it's little programs like that, I think, that are really transformative.
When does Slam Boo happen every year?
That's a good question. I think it happens a few times a year. And I know that they make a point of bringing kids together for a meal, too, because breaking bread is really important to the organization. But I'm not sure about the timing.
Okay, more to talk about with Kristen Anderson and Greg Chalet, the authors of State of Giving, Stories of Oregon Volunteers, Donors, and Nonprofits. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. We'll be back with Greg and Kristen and you in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about philanthropy and giving, giving in the sense of not just money, but also volunteer time and whatever else you happen to have available. Greg Chalet and Kristen Anderson are the co-authors of the book State of Giving, Stories of Oregon Volunteers, Donors, and Nonprofits. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the ways in which people are giving of themselves and trying to help their communities around the state. 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Before we go too far away from talking about the Slam Boo, I'm just curious to know what other sorts of things, Kristen, might be out there that gets kids together across the urban-rural divide in Oregon, that gives them a chance to experience things that you know, to get to know people from another part of the state and in a different kind of community.
Well, one of our favorite examples is Camp Caldera, which is located at Blue Lake off the San Juan Pass. It is supported largely by the advertising mogul Dan Wyden and his wife Priscilla Bernard Wyden, and it was his brainchild. And the story behind it is that I guess Dan realized that quite a lot of his employees at Wyden and Kennedy, which is that big advertising firm that does all the Nike ads, among other things, were basically white middle-class backgrounds. And he really wanted to have a more diverse representation in his business and realized that in order to do that, he was going to have to start at the bottom. So he really wanted to introduce kids from low incomes and kids from communities of color to the creative industries. And he did so by creating this organization called Caldera, which operates both in Portland Public Schools and also out of this camp on Blue Lake. And what he does is he buses a bunch of kids from, I should say what they do, because it's a big organization, it's not just Dan. What Caldera does is they bus a bunch of kids from inner city Portland out to Blue Lake, and they also bring kids in from Madras and Lapine and Bend and some of the Central Oregon rural districts. And so you have this confluence of talent from tribal communities, from African American communities, from low income communities across the state. And again, it's that same, you know, upwelling of creativity and this realization that, you know, mostly what they share is what it's like to be a teenager. You know, where you live doesn't matter so much, but it gets these kids out of their environments and helps them find that creative spirit in a new location altogether.
We pointed out long ago that the state of giving is really a double entendre because, yes, Oregon is a state of giving, but there's also the sense of a progress report here. So when you think, Greg, about the time that you've spent in Oregon philanthropy, what would you say the general state of giving is in Oregon at the moment?
Strong.
Everybody says that at the State of the Union, don't they?
Yeah.
I think strong, yeah. But needs improvement.
It is strong. We rank 17th nationally in terms of percentage of income that we give. It's held steady pretty much at 17-18%. But that's not bad for a state that's gone through multiple recessions like Oregon has. And I think we can be proud of our rank. We advocate that we should be giving more, and we have room for improvement, that there are people who are not volunteering who could volunteer, and people who are not giving who could give. We say the standard should be increase our giving by 0.5%, which would take us roughly to 3%, and that would rank us in the top 5 states nationally. So if we're that close to being in the top 5, we're doing something right. And in Oregon, we see, as Chris was describing, not just giving money, but volunteering. Volunteering, we're in the low 30s, 32%, 34%.
34% of Oregonians volunteer.
And so there's room for improvement, more people to volunteer, too. But there are many, many opportunities, and we think this book that we published has some excellent resources in the back in terms of if you want to volunteer, how do you select a nonprofit to volunteer for? If you want to give money, how do you select an organization to give money to? So there's some good resources in the back of the book. So the double entendre answer is we're doing pretty good, but we could do much better.
Is there a concern that Oregon could slide a bit? I mean, if volunteerism sounds like it's dropping. Well, let me take this in two parts. First of all, is there a concern about philanthropy declining in Oregon over time?
No, not really. We think that it will be increasing because the economy is changing and it's getting stronger.
Okay, now to the volunteer part, I'm curious to know if everybody is sliding a bit, if Oregon has managed to stay in its position, because from what I hear, and it's just anecdotally, that it sounds like volunteerism seems to be dropping across the country.
I think Oregon's holding up pretty well, actually. We found that, you know, it may be a bit of a cliche to say that Oregon has this can-do attitude, but there is a certain public spiritedness in a lot of Oregon communities, and we found that rates of volunteering have held pretty steady. We'd obviously encourage more people. You know, if you've got 34% of the population that's volunteering, that means 66% of the population isn't. And the position that we really take in the book is that if we even just slightly increase our levels of giving and of civic engagement and volunteerism, it could really be transformative for Oregon. I mean, if you think about all of the good things that have happened over the last 15 years, a lot of those have been propelled forward by nonprofits and by the people who are supporting those nonprofits. So we think that just a slight elevation in levels of giving and volunteerism would really have a big effect on the health of our state.
Which is sort of your overall message, isn't mm-hmm. it? That it takes just a little bit more to make a huge difference, because if a lot of people do the little bit more, you really start doing some great things.
Right. We have one of our interviewees, Julie Daniels, the former executive director of Bring Recycling in Eugene, made a really nice analogy. She said that, and this goes for volunteerism too, that philanthropy is like recycling. You know, you give one $5 bill and it doesn't make a difference at all. But if you give one $5 bill over a number of months, over a year, number of years, and if a lot of people are giving $5 bills or giving a couple of hours a week, then that becomes a really transformative amount.
We were talking about places to volunteer in the back of the book. Are these the sorts of resources that are also available at the website?
They are indeed, yes. And actually, I would really urge everybody to go to the website, because we, you know, we're envisioning this book as a celebration of philanthropy and volunteerism in Oregon, but we realized that we could only scratch the surface in this book. And so we would love people to go to the website. It's www.stateofgiving.com. And we provide contact information for ourselves there. If you send us your stories, we will post them to the website. We really don't want this conversation to end with the book. We want to hear about what you do, how you volunteer, how somebody you love volunteers or donates, what a great nonprofit in your community is doing. Send that to us and we'll put it on the website.
I think our web link is to the book only at this point. We'll make sure that before the day is out, we get stateofgiving.com linked as well to
That'd
make sure
great.
That people can find their way to there. We have not talked that much about some of the other major issues that you see as requiring attention from volunteers and philanthropic concerns in Oregon. And school is the first one after talking about bridging the urban-rural divide. And you write about a major inequity you find in Oregon schools. Greg, what is that?
Well, a decline in the achievement levels of poor and minority students, and that's across the state. There are some wonderful efforts moving the dial in the other direction, and one is the Chalkboard Project, which is a statewide effort to engage teachers more in planning their own work schedules and their own programs and measuring their achievement based on how they do against their own standards, and it's really producing positive results in the schools. Another program is the Salem-Keizer Coalition for Equality, which deals with primarily Hispanic students.
How much have efforts like these have had to grow up essentially outside the boundaries of the school district itself because of the fact that these are potentially programs that the school district once handled and no longer do?
Good question. Most have had to grow up outside of the school system. And in some cases, the schools treat them as friendly partners, and in other cases, some schools treat them as unnecessary interventions that we're handling it okay already. And so we've seen, through patience, a lot of progress on these school improvement programs that are occurring. And philanthropy is playing a big role in funding those school improvement programs. Another one that I would mention is I Have a Dream, which guarantees a college education to every student who graduates from a particular school. And these are funded by individual donors. So we're seeing growing partnerships between private donors and public schools to make a difference. And a lot of use of volunteers. I mentioned SMART, the Salem-Keizer Coalition for Equality uses lots of volunteers. And so I think we're seeing some positive direction in school improvement.
You mentioned the fact that some districts do seem to resent the efforts of outside groups, and I wonder, given the constant churn of disagreement about how to improve schools, if there even end up being some disagreements between some of the charitable organizations that are trying to help.
I think that's probably occurring.
Because we do seem to disagree frequently about how to improve schools.
You embrace your mission over another organization's mission.
Well, yeah, there are a lot of different approaches, too. So, you know, some are working at a very grassroots intervention level, working with individual parents or individual students. Others, like the Chalkboard Project, are working on more system-wide reform. And with organizations that are working at a statewide level, like the Chalkboard Project, one thing that we found is that the value of the nonprofit sector really comes through, the value of having a third-party sector who can keep working on these issues over the long term in, you know, despite whatever political upheaval may have recently happened. it's been really useful to have this dedicated organization that can just push things forward regardless of what's happening in school funding or in terms of school politics.
Or who gets elected to the school board.
Right, exactly. Right.
Well, and that's really the essence of the book, is to celebrate, as Chris said at the beginning, celebrate so much of what's happening in Oregon that is good and is improving our state.
And now that you mention it, as we talk about moving outside the political system, I mean, Tom McCall is certainly mentioned early in the book. How could you not, right? But
right.
Then not a lot of political leaders mentioned in the book. It's generally people who have worked alongside the political system in some cases, generally outside of it, but not directly within it.
Well, I think we do want to do justice to people who choose to serve in politics. I think that's a really important form of civic engagement. And while it might be the subject for a different book entirely, we definitely include it as an altruistic pursuit. So we're very grateful to those hardworking politicians out there. And I think a lot of the book's nonprofits do work in solidarity with a lot of politicians. So, for example, in the environmental chapter, we mentioned a number of politicians who have helped work with nonprofits to push conservation reforms forward.
We have an email here from Shoshana. I think this is the Shoshana in Ashland. She says, I just tuned in, so maybe I missed it. Did your guests talk about the major donations given by the Cow Creek Band of Umpqua Indians? I open library books, and there's a plaque acknowledging Cow Creek, and they give to support many Oregon organizations without limit to Native Americans. I find this remarkable considering the history.
We do mention the Cow Creek Band of Indians in the book. We don't mention that specific donation, but we think that tribal philanthropy is a very important part of the patchwork of Oregon philanthropy, and it's a growing part, too. There have been a number of really great initiatives that have come out of tribal funds. So,
I want to talk briefly before we go about one of the other urgent needs that you list in the book, which is hunger and homelessness, which seems to be a problem that not only doesn't go away, but seems to grow in size in Oregon.
It does, and it grows among young school children as well as adults, so families are affected by hunger and homelessness.
And what are some of the programs you think that are doing some good work here?
Well, you've got one right here in Jackson County that's terrific.
It's the Maslow Project?
The Maslow Project, which is a model for the rest of the state in that it's wraparound services for kids and their families, and it really is demonstrating how you can have an impact on this problem, and other programs are showing interest in it statewide.
Kristen? And it's a really great example of how a whole community can come together to help. So Maslow's model really depends on the Maslow Project having this network of community members, church groups, social services, government, local politicians, and they have this whole network of resources that they can call upon so that if a kid needs an ID card or a bus pass or a pair of underwear, they know who to get that from. So it's a really great example of the whole community feeding to fix a problem.
And I believe Maslow has managed to find ways to be allocating the McKinney-Vento funds that allow kids to stay within a school when they are homeless. So that's a federal law and program and money, and yet they find ways to get in there and make use of that.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a really revolutionary model, and I think Mary Farrell, the director of Maslow Project, has done a fantastic job in bridging the federal mandate and local needs.
Lots of great stories about people who are doing wonderful things across the state of Oregon. The book by Kristen Anderson and Greg Chalet is called State of Giving, Stories of Oregon Volunteers, Donors, and Nonprofits. The website, stateofgiving.com. Thanks to both of you for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much.